Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Real Science Radio. I'm Bob Enyart.
And I'm Fred Williams, creation speaker and software engineer.
Skull 1470. Fred, I've been looking forward to this show for months. Yeah. We've been planning this.
And you know, the punchline is that the pigs won.
Oh, yeah. The radiometric dating, they were trying to figure out how old the skull is. And they said, well, it's millions of years old, obviously. But that threw the whole theory of evolution into a tailspin.
For like 10 years, they had a battle on this whole Skull 1470. It's an amazing thing that happened.
The history of the dating of Skull is hysterical.
It is hysterical.
The history is hysterical. So we'll look at it in an appendix of a book titled Bones of Contention by Marvin Lubinow. But first, Fred, good to see you. It's been a while.
Well, Bob, it's great to have you back. You were in England for a while, then you got back, and you went to England for a purpose. You went there to prepare for the debate against Will Kenny, King James only debate. You took the position of the opponent to the view that King James only is the only inspired translation.
Yes, which it is not. And in fact, God has filled the world with his word in 1,000 tongues.
That's right.
That's the mainstream Christian position that we defended.
Yeah.
And Fred, the debate was so much fun.
Oh, man. I've read partway through it. I can't wait to read the rest. It's at theologyonline.com.
Yeah.
It's the headline. So just go to theologyonline.com.
Click on the banner.
And you'll start.
And the translators of the King James from 400 years ago came forward to testify in the debate in their own words, their own handwritten affidavits, on our side and against the King James only camp.
Yeah, the first round was a knockout, but you guys still had to do your other four rounds. I've only read the first two. I can't wait to get through the rest.
And the graphics, the photos, the high resolution photos of the translator's own notes and their translation work from 400 years ago is just great.
I don't know if you had a chance to hear last week's show, but I admitted, when I first really got involved in the Bible, really studying it, reading as much as I could, I became a King James only for like a month.
Yeah.
I actually had a symbolic book burning at my house. I got rid of everything that wasn't King James only.
Oh, my.
Yeah, I fell for it. Yeah. And then I started hearing arguments. I saw Jamie, you know, who we're looking at right now,
Jamie Schofield, producer, Real Science
That's
Radio.
That's right. He was at the Denver People's Fair in a booth called God is Nowhere, which is really God is Now Here. It's a good way to bring atheists in. I went in because I thought, hey, I'm going to take on some secularists. And it turns out this is an apologetics group.
They were creationists.
Jamie and some other guy were debating a King James only guy. And it was like, wow, this poor King James only guy, he's getting slaughtered badly.
Right, yeah.
And so anyways, I had a brief moment in my life where I was King James only. And I came to my senses. I didn't look at both sides of the story before I jumped headfirst into that. And that's the lesson here.
Yes.
Always review both sides of the argument.
Absolutely. So the debate went tremendously well. So much fun and such powerful evidence.
Oh, yeah.
For God's word filling the earth.
That's right.
Literally in 1,000 tongues.
Yeah. So the Japanese aren't hosed because they don't have the inspired version.
No. Exactly right.
Okay. Hey, this is great because, you know, one of the first arguments I heard when I became a young earth creationist around age 35 was how all these independent dating methods all converge on the same date for the age of the earth. So I heard that
prove,
a lot.
Like one strata, they could prove how old that is. And then the next strata, they can prove how old that is.
And then all these independent, separate studies always converge on the same date.
Using different dating mechanisms, all reinforcing the results of one another. We know exactly how old this stuff is. And it all adds up to 4.55 billion years old.
Yeah. And I was real skeptical because I was already seeing all the evidence for young Earth. Yeah. Well, anyways, Dr. Lubinow comes out with this great book called Bones of Contention. Yeah. And there's an appendix at the end that documents this whole Skull 1470 debacle on dating.
It's so fun, Fred, and it doesn't matter that we're a quarter of a century later. It just doesn't matter because this is timeless, because this is science history, and this shows how evolutionists do their science, and it couldn't be more enjoyable.
I can't wait to go through. We've already gone through a couple examples in some prior shows on same thing, where they had these independent dating methods that converge on the same date, and then lo and behold, they find something that contradicts it.
Right.
So they got to throw that whole thing out.
And then
out.
They have all new independent dating
but
methods.
But this is the all-time classic, Skull 1470.
So let's savor the appendix to Lubinow's book, Bones of Contention, It's titled The Dating Game. So he begins by pointing out that there's a popular myth that radioactive dating methods are independent confirmation of the geologic column, the time scale. So, Fred, don't you know that potassium-argon dating could tell you exactly how old something
plus
is?
Plus, if you combine it with fission tracking and all this.
Yeah, well, right. And so, and that myth includes the idea that these various dating methods, you just named another, are all independent of one another, and so they act as controls. So when they say, hey, we've dated this by three different methods, you really could take that to the bank. That is the date within its margin of error. So there's a case study.
There is a case study. So Richard Leakey, he's the son of the famed paleontologist Lewis and Mary Leakey. Well, guess where he went? He went to Africa. He's going to look for a human ancestor because that's where you make all your money. You get all your grant funds because it's a...
Oh, yeah.
They really
if
want you,
you
to find man's ancestor.
That man evolved from apes, that's the Holy Grail, right?
That's right.
For all of the atheists who want to deny that God made us in his image and his likeness, even though there's about 700,000, Fred, we've shown the documentation, 700,000 scholars, PhDs and MDs in America who say God was involved in the origin of human life. The atheists desperately need to falsify that. So if they can show that, hey, some skull is proof that we were evolving from an ape-like creature millions of years ago, that is the Holy Grail.
Well, we have a quote from one of these guys, Johansson, that says he knew the money would dry up unless he found a hominid pretty quick. I'm paraphrasing, but it's pretty close.
Right.
So this guy, Richard Leakey, he organized an expedition to this place near Lake Randolph in East Africa, because there's a whole bunch of fossils they already knew about there. They had real rich fossil deposits.
And he found something called Skull 1470.
Yeah, that was the big discovery.
It was never given a proper name, even though it's so famous.
It's still 1470.
So and its full name is KNMER 1470 for Kenyan National Museum, East Rudolph 1470. So, Fred, this fossil was originally dated at 2.9 million years old, but there was a problem because it didn't look old.
It didn't look old. In fact, Leuvenau believes it was it's just a human. I mean, they found another human they're trying to turn into an ape, but it looked way too modern to be man's ancestor.
Very large cranial capacity. It looked awfully human. And so if it was 2.9 million years old, that's an enormous problem. So this precipitated a conflict over the dating of this fossil, which lasted in the pages of the world's leading science journals, especially the journal Nature, it lasted 10 years.
It did last 10 years. So he had an associate, Kay Barensmeyer.
Yes.
And she, what she did was she discovered a layer of volcanic ash or tuff, and that is something that you can date. You know, you can get a date from that stuff.
Yeah, so a tuff, a layer of ash. Fred, could we talk about that for a moment? Geologists, old earth geologists, they will start with layers of volcanic ash, like in the Scablands in Washington, the state of Washington. And they'll build an argument that because there are these layers of ash, the Missoula flood that formed the Scablands, it couldn't have been one great flood like it looks to be. No, it had to be 40 separate floods over thousands of years, of course, right? Well, they assume that volcanoes only erupt sporadically. And therefore, when you find a layer of ash, that implies the passage of some good amount of time. Then you find another layer.
Yeah, so it's like a marker.
Yes. Well, it turns out that there's new data that geologists, and this is hard data, geologists have documented that when there is an earthquake or some tectonic upheaval, that triggers volcanic eruptions, even from volcanoes that are hundreds of kilometers away from an epicenter. So when you find these layers of ash in the sediments of some catastrophe, it doesn't mean that they're hundreds or thousands of years apart, because the catastrophe causes the eruption. And that's now very well documented around the world.
That's right.
So now back to Kay Barensmeyer. She discovered this layer of ash. And Richard Leakey was here in Denver, and he said that this woman, Kay Barensmeyer from Yale University, was the only woman in the world who had a volcanic ash layer named after her. Because it's the KBS tough, right?
Yeah, yeah.
T-U-F-F, this ash layer.
Yeah, and again, human fossils, that you can't date them with radiometric dating methods, but you can date the things that they're found in, or that you can date this tough that it's found in.
Yes. So
because it contains radioactive potassium, which decays into argon over time. It has a real long half-life, so you can use that as a clock.
So the K. Barentsmeyer site, KBS TUF, they did exactly what you said, Fred. They looked at the potassium and the argon, and potassium decays into argon. And so then you look at the difference in the quantities of the two, and you have to make assumptions, right? How much of the one was there to begin with? How much of the other? And so they make those assumptions, and which is funny on the face of it. But so they ended up saying that this tuff, if we could date this tuff, then the date of the tuff becomes a maximum age for all the fossils found above it. And it's a minimum age for all the fossils found below it. Now, that sounds very straightforward.
The problem is they find this skull, which is very modern looking, below this tuff.
Yeah. The tuff is about 3 feet thick, this volcanic ash layer. And there are two other thin layers of volcanic ash above K's tuff, and another lies below it. So these four tufts are like the floors of a four-story building, and the fossil sediments lie between them, sort of like the rooms of the building would be between the floors.
Yeah, and each floor would be a different era of time.
Yes. And not surprisingly to young earth creationists, because of the global flood being the source of most of the fossils in the world, this tuff turns out to be not primarily airfall tuff. It was settled underwater, so some would fall on water and sink, and much of it was carried through a current, and they know that because of how much the transport and deposition, it's filled with foreign material.
Yeah, yeah.
So
it was
they could
transported
tell.
There.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Kind of like the petrified forest in Yellowstone, the, you know,
ooh,
40 million years of forest on top of each other.
Right.
Turns out they were transported there in one major catastrophic event.
Yes, exactly. And we've covered that. It's so much fun. rsr.org/petrifiedtrees.
Okay.
So they wanted to date this volcanic ash layer, but it's difficult because it has all this foreign material in it. So, and they even admit that it's difficult to get pure samples. So what would a pure sample be? Well, the first study was done in 3 years before Skull 1470 was discovered.
Yeah, it was discovered in 1972. So
yes,
this is before it was discovered.
Yeah, so Richard Leakey, he's there on site. So he supplied rocks from this volcanic ash. Like if you go to Mount St. Helens today, some of it solidifies, a lot of it solidifies into rock. He supplied some of these rocks to the University of London and Cambridge, and those guys knew what they were doing with potassium argon.
Yeah, they know how to date it.
Yeah, and because there are many species of mammals that were found below K's tuff, as well as these apes that are called Australopithecine, and there were human artifacts found below the tuff, it's really important for these evolutionists to figure out how old this volcanic ash is.
That's right. So in their report in Nature, here's the dates they came up with. The original dates gave dates between 212 and 230 million years old, years of age.
All right.
So that's a little bit too high.
So 212 to 230, say 220 million years ago, we're talking about the age of the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
We're talking about early in the age of the dinosaurs.
Yeah. So they claim, here's a quote, "From these results, it was clear that an extraneous argon age discrepancy was present." Well, how do they know that?
Right. This places all these mammals and these human artifacts smack dab in the Triassic period of the Mesozoic era.
Yeah.
So it just can't be, right?
Yeah. This date doesn't work. But why do they think it's disparate age? What's wrong with this date?
Well, the only thing wrong with it is that it doesn't fit their evolutionary presuppositions.
That's right. It doesn't fit the fossils.
That's the only thing wrong with it. This date could be perfectly accepted by the exact same geologist in a slightly different setting that didn't have those fossils.
Yeah. Kind of like the fossils date the rocks, date the fossils, date the rocks, date the fossils. It's a big circular problem.
Yes, right. It's a circular reasoning entering the lab. And so when you fit the rock layers, and this is Lubinow pointing this out in his book, Bones of Contention. When you fit the rock layers into their proper sequences over large geographic areas, then it turns out that it's evolution and the fossils that guide the geologist, not the other way around.
So how do they deal with this 200 plus million year old date, which obviously, you know, doesn't fit?
No.
So here's a quote. It would only be possible to date this tuff by careful extraction of undoubtedly juvenile components for analysis.
And this is by the two scientists who are the main ones publishing in the journal Nature.
Yeah.
So they said, we have to extract out of the samples of the rocks of this volcanic ash, we have to extract the ones that date young.
Yeah.
That is.
And they have to be very careful about how they do this.
Yes. Now that's
because that's going to play into later where these other guys are real careful about what they do. Then they get in an argument with each other.
Yeah. So
who is more careful than the other? It's not who is more careful. It's who has a date that fits their worldview. But I'm jumping ahead. But go ahead, Bob.
Yeah. So you're exactly right. So they could take 20 samples now, and the ones that date young, they say these are the ones that are not contaminated.
Yeah.
And throw all the others out. And that's a selection bias. That's such a typical logical fallacy.
Yep.
You are selecting the data that confirms your preconceived conclusion, and then you say, this is the valid data.
Yeah. It's just like when they look for mutations that are supposedly shared between humans and chimps and parts in a gene that's not functioning. So they say it's a shared mistake. Well, it turns out it's not true anyways because the gene has a function, but they also selectively find ones that would be shared instead of all the other ones that aren't shared. Yeah. It's the same type of thing. It's totally selective process to fit their worldview.
So you know where Dinosaur Ridge is, right?
Yeah.
Right up
the road from here, basically.
Yeah. Golden, Colorado.
Yeah. Been there
where they
several
have
times.
All the dinosaur footprints. We were taking a tour with a geologist, just a few friends, and he volunteers at Friends of Dinosaur Ridge. And so toward the end of the tour, I asked him about when they submit fossils or strata specimens for radiometric dating, if they ever use a double blind mechanism. And he said, no, we don't do that. we would never do that. So we asked, well, why not? Because most of science does that, much of science. And he said, well, we geologists, we're professionals. We would never allow our bias to interfere with our results. And Fred, that is how deep their bias goes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this is part of their history. And this is hysterical as we continue, because eventually they throw out all the radiometric dating, all of it, many, many independent tests from universities around the world. They throw it all out and they conclude the date based on pigs.
Yeah, based on fragments of teeth of pigs.
They say, we know when the pigs evolved.
They have this fascination with pig teeth, you know, like Nebraska Man. What is it with their pig teeth?
They found teeth in a farm in Nebraska, and they made a whole hominid species out of it.
They did.
Human-like species.
Yeah.
The whole civilization, they showed its tools, their social arrangements.
And it all came from a tooth.
Of a pig.
Tooth it was later tooth found out to be a pig.
What evolutionists are able to build from their favorite fossil, which is an incomplete fossil.
Yeah.
When they have an incomplete fossil like these
they
pigs,
go crazy, yeah.
They could prove anything.
They can.
So forget all the radiometric dating. Forget all that. We've got the pigs.
And forget all those invertebrate species we have in the fossil record that are complete and whole, but they can't find any evidence of evolution in those. I've got an evolutionary textbook.
Yeah.
That's a college textbook.
Yeah.
His examples for evolution in the fossil record are these pieces of bone from whale and whatnot. Yeah. He's got a whole chapter on invertebrates, but no examples of evolution because they're complete and they can't find it.
Yeah.
There's no transition.
And Fred, we did the whole June is whale month at Real Science Radio this year. Right. So fun. Okay. So Lubinow goes on to point out that the geochronologist, he selects the data to get a good date. And he does this with absolute sincerity. He doesn't think he's doing anything shady. He is so committed to evolution and the ages required for evolution that he truly believes that to remove error from his data, he has to take out all the data that doesn't fit the theory.
Yeah.
He truly believes that, and he doesn't have a clue that he's doing anything inappropriate. So the subjectivity of the whole thing escapes him, and it's a perfect illustration of circular reasoning. We had on this show back in 2013, a nuclear chemist PhD, author of homeschool textbooks, Dr. Jay Weil. He's a friend of Real Science Radio. And Fred, I asked him, I think on his third appearance on the show, to get Darwin's Doubt by Stephen Meyer on page 109 and to read a sentence.
And now Stephen Meyer, he's an ID guy.
Yes.
He believes in intelligent design, but he's certainly not a young earth creationist.
No, he's against Darwin, Darwin's Doubt. And he does believe God created us, but he thinks the earth is old.
Yeah.
So he believes all the radiometric dating.
That's right.
And so let's hear Jay Weil reading this sentence and then his response. He got a PhD in nuclear chemistry. In fact, he was involved in a lab at his university where they did all this dating. Let's hear it.
Recently, a couple things we've done. We interviewed a Discovery Institute director, the author of Darwin's Doubt, New York Times bestseller, Stephen Meyer. And in a moment, I want to quote one sentence from that book. But also recently, we interviewed a gentleman who has a degree in nuclear chemistry. I want to read one sentence out of Darwin's Doubt to Dr. Jay Weil. Dr. Weil, welcome back to Real Science Radio.
Oh, it's great to be here.
It was great to interview you recently. You were a speaker at the Denver Area Rocky Mountain Creation Fellowship. Thank you for that. And so here, I've got Meyer's book right here. I enjoyed it thoroughly, Darwin's Doubt. And on page 109, there's one sentence. Maybe, could I hand it to you? Could you read the sentence? I don't want to catch you off guard, but sure. Just get your thought.
Unlike radiometric dating methods, molecular clocks depend on a host of contingent factors.
That's a chuckle. I wrote in the margin that I was chuckling when I read that. Now, Stephen Meyer, he does have a background in geophysics, but your education, your career has suggested otherwise.
Well, and Stephen Meyer's a great example. I mean, he is truly a brilliant guy. Probably from a standpoint of science, he's forgotten more science than I ever learned. Mm. So he's a brilliant guy. There's no question about that. His other book, Signature on the Cell, demonstrates his brilliance. Mm-hmm. But even brilliant guys can be deceived if they don't look into things well enough. And the reason I chuckled at that sentence is because, quite frankly, you know, I know a radioactive dating. I'm a nuclear chemist, got my PhD at a lab that did some of the best radioactive dating of the time. And I have to tell you, it is dependent on a host of contingent factors.
So that's a riot, Bob. You know, here's a guy I like too. Now, he's an evolutionist, but this guy's funny. This Vincent Maglio. So he does his own bit of dating. But here, we're going to have to do a cliffhanger here for the audience.
From Princeton University.
Yeah. So Vincent did some dating based on animal species.
Yeah.
So, and what he came up with.
Vertebrates.
So he actually came up with some concordant dates. But here's the thing that we'll share with you next time. It's kind of funny. This guy ended up going into medical science.
He did. He left paleontology.
Because he ends up losing a debate. He ends up losing his battle. He's an elephant guy. And there's some pig guys, and the pigs won. But we'll save that for next show because we're out of time.
The pigs beat the radiometric dating. They beat the evolution of the elephants.
They did.
And Maglio
threw his hands up and went into medical science.
Yes.
Probably a good choice.
Yes. So, Fred, thank you for part one. We'll conclude next week with part two of Skull 1470 and the hysterical dating of that particular fossil. Until then, this is Bob Benyart and Fred Williams for Real Science Radio. Please go to our website, click on the store. If you purchase our science materials, you will love them and you'll help us continue to broadcast. And until next time, may God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it
talking about.
Hi, this is Bob Enyart. At Real Science Radio, we have a great science store. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, online, realscienceradio.com. Click on the store or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist?, Bob Enyart debates atheist Zaketh, a psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist?, and then Mount St. Helens, The Explosive Evidence for Catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realscienceradio.com.